All right, welcome in. Fan pregame on a baby Friday. A 90-minute edition, Sportsnet 360 for the hour. Sportsnet 590, the fan, for the full 90.
Love
Justin
it.
Cuthbert and Jesse Rubinoff. What's going on, man?
Not much, man. I know we talk about this often, but this is such an incredible time to be a sports fan. Like last night, what more could you ask for? And then tonight,
run from
football
the
mix. Yeah, that's right. Run from the Guardians.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of scoring in baseball, but the baseball has been great. You get hockey really in full flight starting last night. And it's just, it's so refreshing to just be able to turn on the TV for hours and watch whatever you want, basically.
So of all the things that are happening, I mean, pretty unbelievable seeing the Edmonton Oilers get whacked in the way they did. What, 47 saves, Samuel Montembeau? I guess that's unlikely, but I think the most unlikely thing, at least if you asked me a couple months ago, would be what the New York Mets are doing. This is transformed into something that is, I think, pretty powerful. So I'll just lead it off. You think the New York Mets are winning the World Series?
Well, they certainly have the momentum. Here's the thing that's so fascinating about them. And I remember a couple days ago, we were talking about like the Mets are somehow likable and like the Cinderella story, even though they're the highest payroll in baseball. Mm-hmm. Like that's not that easy to pull off, to get other people, other fan bases, and like the objective onlooker to be like, yeah, I kind of like this team, even though they literally have the highest payroll in all of baseball. They're not supposed to be the likable New York Mets, but somehow the way that they've won, the like clutch factor, Lindor last night with the grand slam, even thinking back to when Lindor hit the home run off Bowden Francis to break up the no hitter, like they're doing things in this like magical way that makes you stop and say, yeah, they spend a lot of money, but still, it's really cool to be able to witness what they're doing right
now. So they're filling up like multiple buckets. And like the Detroit Tigers represent something, right? It's like this plucky underdog thing, like not supposed to be here, riding the wave of an unbelievable pitcher, but that's pretty much it. And the Mets have somehow harnessed that despite being this organization that pays endless dollars to try to compete and hasn't been able to. For that, for whatever reason it may be. But that really is, if we're talking about underdog stories, are we talking about teams that can actually win the World Series? Like, yeah, they are the underdogs and they're riding on this like free roll mentality, but they also have mega stars on their team, like Francisco Lindor, who hits that grand slam yesterday and does it in a manner where it's like, no, that was supposed to happen. And when it's supposed to happen and you believe that, and it's not something that, you know, is, it can only last so long, like this fleeting moment. It's not a fleeting moment in their eyes, at least it seems. It's business, like it's what's supposed to happen. And when you're working on that type of mentality and everybody else around you is, one, deficient in some ways, but two, like having to grind through this to this point, like it feels like the Mets have endless opportunity in front of them. Already in the NLCS, they're going to be playing a team that has some concerns. And right now, the Mets just look around and no one's a concern. Everyone is not only high paid, but suddenly doing the job of a high paid player.
Yeah, that was their first series win at home since 2000. The last time they were able to celebrate in their own ballpark a playoff series victory was 2000 at Shea Stadium. It's now Citi Field. So while they're supposed to be the big bad Mets in terms of the dollar amount and what they spend, their lack of success, the fact that they're still sort of looked upon as a little brother to the New York Yankees, even though they play in different leagues, there hasn't been the success there where people have looked at them and said, they've just, you kind of feel sorry for them in a way that they've mismanaged all the money that they've spent over the years. But it feels like they've now been able to harness something magic and they believe in themselves clearly, which is honestly probably the most important thing. Like you could get by on smoke and mirrors, but you have to have a belief in the clubhouse that you can actually get it done. And I think you're looking at the Mets here and they're probably thinking we can't count ourselves out of any game. Like there's no game where we could be down 8-0. We could be down, you know, 4-1. None of it matters when we have the clutch factor that it seems like we have and the magic that we have at the moment. And looking ahead to the NLCS, like the Padres shine the last couple of games has wore off a little bit. Like they're on a pretty significant scoreless run here.
They're looking like front runners.
Yeah.
Like they don't know how to play if they're down.
Exactly. And then you look at the Dodgers and it's like, that's a team that basically spends just as much money. They spent $1 billion in the offseason. So I think like they're going to have the backing of almost everybody pretty much no matter who they play, because I think the Padres are easy, as much fun as the Padres are, pretty easy to dislike if you don't like the attitude factor of the Padres. And then the Dodgers is like, they are the big bad Dodgers. Mm. So the Mets are going to be this like cute underdog story in the NLCS, even though they're supposed to be the big bad Mets. It's a fascinating story.
I'm looking past that. I'm glad you brought up the Yankees, because what a dynamic that would be if it is, in fact, the Subway Series.
Yeah, okay, bring it back, baby.
Of course, the Yankees are the team that would face all the pressure.
Yeah.
They would be the team that, yeah, spends a bunch, but is more under in the category of the massive spenders that everybody hates. While you mentioned the Mets have taken on an identity that's not actually really theirs. Yeah. It's just theirs in the context,
like living a lie.
In the context of who they're playing, like the Dodgers and the Padres and the Phillies. And of course, if they get to the New York Yankees, who I think have a pretty like favorable path, at least to get there. But what a dynamic it would be with all the pressure that would be on the Yankees and the seemingly pressure-free world that the New York Mets currently exist in, which doesn't make much sense when you say it out loud, but it's what we're seeing so far. We're going to bring Rob Rossi on at 6:30 to talk about Sidney Crosby, year 20, Penguins and Red Wings on the network tonight. But before we do that, let's continue this baseball discussion with New York Times contributor Scott Miller. Scott, thanks for doing this.
Absolutely. How are you guys? Playoff fever yet?
Oh, yeah, we got it. It's been a really, really fun ride to this point, bemoaning the fact that these series are only five games, because I just want more of what we've seen so far. But the Mets definitely have our attention, Scott. You know, there's deficiencies everywhere when looking at this playoff bracket. I don't think there's a perfect team out there. I don't think there's a team that's close to perfect out there. And the Mets are far from perfect, but they've become this powerful force. What's driving that for you?
Yeah, I mean, you know what? There's a couple of things. You're right. I agree completely with you. That's what's making these playoffs so interesting. Every team is flawed. There's not that one great team out there, not that one powerhouse out there. Anybody can beat anybody, including the Detroit Tigers. We've seen that. But the Mets, biggest thing they've got going for them right now is they got hot at the right time. And with the expanded playoffs, that's we've seen more and more what it takes. Like Arizona got hot at the right time last year. And, you know, the Mets are fine. I mean, they've got big hits from Vientos and obviously Alonso's, you know, who didn't have a great season, didn't have a great end of the season. He's heated up. You know, Severino and some of the pitching they've got, it's been just enough. The bullpen still scares you. I mean, Edwin Diaz is not the same as he once was, but they've got hot at the right time. And it's kind of like the NCAA basketball tournament in the spring. It's, you know, time after time, especially again with baseball's expanded playoffs, you see if a team, the big thing now is just, it's not even winning a division. It's just let's build a team that can at least qualify for the playoffs. And then you never know what's going to happen. And, oh, by the way, if we get hot at the right time, we can run the table. That's where the Mets are right now.
Justin and I were talking about the likability factor of the New York Mets and maybe how they're not supposed to be that likable because they spend so much money. But somehow I think the objective onlooker is watching Mets and thinking, hey, this is a fun team to root for. How do you think they managed to go from a team that everybody sort of disdain based on the dollar amount that they spend to now this likable, fun team that even myself, I'm watching last night or watching previous games, I'm thinking to myself, like, the way they're doing this is kind of fun. How'd they manage to do that?
You know, I think it's a combination of things. One, I mean, what they do, you know, especially because of Verlander and Scherzer, the two starting pitchers that they traded. In other areas, they cut, $100 million off their payroll from last year? I mean, they've gone way down, but it's kind of a false equivalency, because I do think, you know, there's a lot of talk about that. Like, hey, you know, look, man, the Mets have cut $100 million and they're winning. But they still are spending, I think it's $300 million in dead money they've got on their payroll, like all the money they owe Houston for Verlander, all the money they owe Texas for Scherzer. So, you know, it's kind of a false equivalency. They're not the, oh, look, the Mets cut their payroll by $100 million. There's more to the story than that. But I think people, I think the Mets, there's way more to the story than that because of the dead money. It's not as simple as it seems. But that said, you know, some people think, oh, they've cut their payroll, and other people see, well, they, you know, the Phillies won the division. The Mets just got in as a wild card, and around the All-Star game, they, their record wasn't good. Nobody thought they'd be in. So you, that's all somehow how they got tagged as an underdog.
Let's switch gears here, Scott. Talk about Padres and Dodgers. Was definitely a series that has captivated baseball fans, and even beyond that, the Dodgers are a fascinating case, and the Padres too. But the Dodgers, with Shohei Ohtani, with an all-star laden lineup, and they are entirely devoid of starting pitching, and yet it still seems that they could win this thing, or at least get through the Padres. Like, with a really strong bullpen performance to this point, and maybe not the best comparatively, but definitely a group that has performed well, plus that superstar lineup, can they overcome the fact that you can't throw anyone out there and feel overly comfortable getting the ball to start the game?
No, I mean, that's what's so odd. But yet, what's also so odd, you know, Dodgers pitching has been in tatters for about half of the season, yet they still ended up with the best record in the National League. So, you know, that part doesn't make sense. You know, they looked really bad two nights ago, and then they looked a lot better last night. You know, two nights ago, aside from the starting pitching that's a complete mess, they had to take Miguel Rojas, the shortstop, out of the game mid-game because he started game three, but he's battling a torn adductor muscle. And you could just watching him move. I was at the game in the stadium, and it was painful. I mean, the guy looked like a cripple out there. And when they finally made the move to replace him mid-game, it was no surprise. It was like, you know, he can't even move. And same game, Freddie Freeman had to jump for a ball at first base. He came down on that bad ankle he's got. And then he had to be scratched from the lineup last night. Freddie Freeman's badly sprained ankle, if it was the middle of the season, he'd be out for 4 or 5 weeks. Instead, the Dodgers got the bye last week from winning their division, so he got a week off, but that's it. So he's gimpy too, and he couldn't play last night. So aside from the rotation, like you say, it's a superstar-laden lineup, but it's also minus Freddie. So now instead of your top three of being Shohei Ohtani, Mookie Betts, and Freddie Freeman, you know, they moved Teoscar Hernandez up to the third spot last night, and Freeman was out. So we'll see if Freeman's able to go to post, as they say, tomorrow night in game five. But, you know, even if he does, it's kind of like watching Kirk Gibson try to gimp around back in the 88 World Series or Willis Reed try to play for the NBA championship 1970 for the Knicks with a torn groin. You know, Freeman is not nearly 100%, and he's not going to be. So they've got issues all over the place. But, you know, right now they think one of the strengths of the team is their bullpen, and they proved that last night by going to a bullpen game in game four, and they shut out the Padres.
Yeah, indeed they did. You know, it sets up a really fascinating game five, obviously. But because Dylan Cease has been really bad through two starts, and maybe pitching him so soon was a mistake in the end, and because Michael King did not have a good start, you know, it all rests on Yu Darvish here to beat LA twice in this series, or at least survive that lineup twice in order to put the Padres in a position to win. Interesting legacy stakes, like underrated legacy stakes, I think, here for Yu Darvish, who's had a long and successful career, but this could be crowning achievement stuff if he can get the Padres through the Dodgers, no?
Absolutely, it could. And, you know, the other thing that adds a layer to it is he's battling the ghosts of Dodger Stadium, because if you remember at the trade deadline in 2017, the Dodgers acquired him from Texas to try to bulk up their rotation down the stretch. And Darvish was pretty good, not great, but then 2017 is when the Dodgers ran into, they didn't know at the time, but in the World Series, the cheating Houston Astros that were stealing signs,
Darvish just got roasted by the Astros in that World Series, and he was booed vociferously in Dodger Stadium. I mean, nobody knew the Astros were cheating, but while they were doing it, Darvish was supposed to be the trade deadline savior for the Dodgers. Instead, he got beat up by the Astros, who people didn't know at the time, but they were cheating. They had all the pitches that were coming. So it was unfair, but Darvish took a lot of heat for that. So everybody now, especially Los Angeles too, I think understands, okay, that's what happened. But that said, you know, there's some scars there for Darvish. So, he, as you said, good for him. He stood up, you know, the other day in Dodger Stadium, game one, and he faced down some of those demons, and he pitched really, really well. You know, tomorrow night, that's going to be a brutal atmosphere, especially after game two, you know, when the Padres kind of taunted the Dodgers, the fans threw stuff on the field. Well, now you're down to a one-game winner-take-all tomorrow night. And in Dodger Stadium. So by not closing the Dodgers out last night in San Diego, you know, the Padres have put themselves in a tough yeah. predicament because, you know, they can win. I'm not saying they can't, and they very well might. But it's going to be a really, really difficult atmosphere and a tough place for them to win tomorrow night.
Let's talk Aaron Judge. 0 for 4 last night, 1 for 11 in the series. We know that he's getting pitched differently, clearly, but at some point that can't be an excuse anymore when you are Aaron Judge. You got to adjust to the adjustments, if you will. He's hitting 0.91 in the series. This is part of a larger thing with Aaron Judge, that the playoff success hasn't necessarily been there for him. Are you surprised that the lack of playoff success has continued into this postseason?
To a degree, yes, but, you know, you think back in the early 90s, you know, Barry Bonds went through the same problem. You know, Bonds, like in multiple playoffs, was awful, and that's what Judge reminds me of right now, and it's tough because, you know, when you're the guy, the opposing team looks at that lineup and says, okay, this is the guy we cannot let yeah. beat us. So everybody's focused on him, number one. Number two, you know, scouting reports in the playoffs are even more detailed than during the regular season. There are no secrets, and some scouts are really good about picking out weaknesses and then passing them along. And then the team, whoever Judge is facing, you know, the pitchers are really good at pitching to his weaknesses. And that's part of what we've seen so far. But you're right. If you're a superstar player, legit, you need to make some adjustments, and the Yankees keep waiting for it. I think Judge is too good. I think eventually he'll be heard from in this Kansas City series, but, you know, it's going to have to be sooner than later. That was a big win for the Yankees last night because they're up 2-1 now, and at least they only need one more to win. But the reason I say it was a big win, they got Kansas City pitchers walked 9 Yankees last night, and it still was 2-2 in the late innings. You know, Stanton's home run to win that game, it had to be a huge sigh of relief because there's absolutely no excuse for the Yankees to get 9 walks and they could only get to 2 runs in the 8th inning. They got to do a much better job of hitting and taking advantage of that.
Last one for you, Scott. We appreciate the time. All things being equal, let's say all things are equal by the end of the day in the American League, which AL team is best equipped to actually win the World Series once they get there?
You know, again, they're so even. I mean, the knee-jerk is be the Yankees with Judge and Juan Soto and company. But aside from that, we opened this discussion with the Mets and how hot they are. Detroit's the equivalent of that in the American League. I mean, I could see the Yankees getting into the World Series. I could see, shockingly enough, the way they're playing right now is a hot team, Detroit running the table. Probably those would be my top two picks right now, although Bibee of Cleveland may have something to say about that in this game that just started. He's a stud, and he could easily even this series with Detroit 2 apiece. But, you know, it's fun because I don't think there's any one favorite out there, and I do think there's a bunch of matchups we could see in the World Series that would be really cool. I mean, start with the Dodgers-Padres series, winner of that. You know, you could have a Dodgers-Yankees World Series, which obviously the TV networks are pulling for, and that would be a rematch of the 77-78 epic World Series. That would be very cool. If the Padres win, right now the Padres have only been two World Series in their career, lifetime, organizational lifetime, and both, there could be a rematch of either one of those. 1984 was Tigers-Detroit. We could see that rematch again. 1998 was Padres-Yankees. We could see that rematch. We could see a Yankees-Phillies 2009 rematch. We could see a Royals-Mets 2015 World Series rematch. Who knows the way it's going to spin out, but you know, there's some enticing matchups like that we could see, let alone however it plays out.
Yeah, two New York teams, the Dodgers, another California team, and the Padres. It makes for some juicy potential matchups if and when we get there. Scott, this was fun catching up today. We appreciate the time. Enjoy the baseball games today and through the weekend.
You as well, and obviously I missed another World Series juicy matchup. You mentioned earlier the Subway Series, too. The Mets-Yankees played in 2000. We still could have a redux of that as well. So,
and that would be incredible.
Stay tuned. Enjoy the games. Yeah, we'll talk soon.
Thanks, Scott. We appreciate it. That's Scott Miller, New York Times contributor. Lots of great matchups out there. And just by the way, the Guardians are up 1-0 middle first against the Tigers, trying to even that series. He mentioned the Tigers as a team that could maybe has best chances the any other American League team. And that tells you a lot about what's going on in the American League right
now.
It's... I do disagree, though. Like, a 7-game series and a 5-game series for the Tigers, completely different story. They are just trying to hold their nose and get to the next Scooble start.
Yeah.
And really, you can't do that unless it's full Madison Bumgarner. If you're the Tigers, when you get there, I feel like the Tigers are going to hit a wall if they get through the American League Championship Series. And that's even more evidence to suggest that this is breaking nicely for the Yankees. But I have absolutely no confidence in them or really any other American League team in the World Series. I think the Guardians actually would be my answer to that, have the best chance to win, because they just have some good pitching that can keep you afloat and get you into 50-50 ball games.
Yeah,
and maybe it breaks right.
Yeah, well, the Guardians kind of beating the Tigers at their, or the Tigers haven't beaten the Guardians at their own game with clutch hitting and good pitching. And you're right, I think when you extend the series out to a 7-game series, you're always going to want to bet on the team that has more depth, and the Guardians certainly have more pitching depth than the Tigers do, but in this truncated series, they're able to be exploited by the Tigers. And I just think, yeah, you're right, it sets up so well for the Yankees. My question for you, what do you think the TV networks want? New York, New York, or probably New York, LA to keep California engaged?
That's fascinating. It probably is Dodgers, Yankees because of Shohei.
Yeah, you don't want to, that's a great point.
Because it, honestly, if Shohei was still an LA Angel, still toiling away with Anaheim, whatever they want to call themselves, all the different names, I think it would be New York, New York, because that would get everybody's attention, right? Like, it's just something special, captivating the city in the way that it would. I just think it would be beyond special to have that. Again, Yankees always hits, but having the Mets there and the story the Mets are authoring would be incredible. But because Shohei is potentially the greatest player that's ever played baseball. And he's had this backlash of disaster with Anaheim. I do think that opportunity to see him on that stage versus the Yankees, no less, is 1,000 out of 1,000.
You know what bothered me last night? Mookie Betts, after the game, said the Dodgers are like grinders and fighters. Mm-hmm. I was like, are you really?
I don't think so.
One of your players is literally making $1 billion.
They are well-paid grinders.
What does that mean?
And fighters. Still to come tonight, Yankees and Royals game 4, 8 p.m. on Sportsnet 590. The Fan, Sportsnet, and Sportsnet Plus. The pregame on all platforms begins at 7:30. We will take you all the way up to that point. Next up, Rob Rossi from The Athletic. Talk a little Penguins against the Red Wings tonight on Sportsnet. That's next.
Diving deep into Leafs, Raptors, Jays, and NFL. The J.D. Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, we're back on the Fan pregame. Busy, busy night on the network, of course. Penguins and Red Wings. It's the busiest. Like, the NHL always, like, hits you over the head with its start, right? Penguins get throttled last night. Have to play the Wings tonight. Maple Leafs lose despite 47 shots in Montreal. They play against Sheldon Keefe, the New Jersey Devils, tonight. Busy, busy night, and important to get off to a good start. But Penguins and Red Wings is always interesting, but it's made more interesting now that the Penguins were brutal last night.
Yeah.
And Sidney Crosby just gave the discount of all discounts. And I know there's not going to be any remorse there. And we'll figure out with Rob Rossi, who will join us in a second, if there is. But are you concerned of Sidney Crosby's future, Jesse?
Yeah, I don't think it'll ever come to a point where the Penguins trade him. Like, I think he'll withstand whatever he has to withstand to retire as a Penguin.
Yeah.
I think that was evident based on what he signed for. Like, you don't take that sort of discount if you're going to be okay with eventually being traded somewhere else. But yeah, I mean, the boot off the ice at the end of the first period, some questions about their goaltending for sure. You just start to wonder, like, at what point does the pressure get ratcheted up on Kyle Dubas? I know he hasn't been there very long, but still, there are questions abound in Pittsburgh.
Let's go to the source for that. Rob Rossi of The Athletic joins us now to talk about the Penguins' start and what's ahead. Thanks for doing this, Rob.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. I don't know if it was much of a start, but yeah.
Oh, of course. Of course. No, it wasn't much of a start, though, for the Penguins. Last night, they were walloped by the New York Rangers, obviously a division rival. Not the start you envisioned, but maybe the start you could have predicted. How much of a concern, given the background coming in, the summer, the concern over where this team is going, obviously the benefit of having Sidney Crosby sign that sweetheart deal, but after last night already, is there major consternation in Pittsburgh over the Penguins?
Well, I was 4 goals off my prediction last night because I said 7-3 Rangers. So Rangers maybe almost could have had 7. Look, 21st home opener for me, covering the team, probably the most alarming one from the standpoint of they were booed off the ice in the first period, which, you know, say what you want about Penguin fans, but the ones that show up in the building are usually overwhelmingly supportive. For them to boo that team after being down 3 goals, I understand why they did. It was sort of a lot of the same. The team generated some offense early, but couldn't score. They gave up some goals, didn't get great goaltending, didn't get great defending. And then they kind of had a moment at the end of that second period where you could kind of feel like the game was kind of in the balance and they just didn't rise to it. I don't know if there's concern as much as that might've been a sobering effect. I think that, excuse me, I thought I had to sneeze. That's how tough it is. I'm allergic to them already. I think that a lot of people in Pittsburgh really haven't paid much attention to the Penguins offseason other than the Crosby contract. And I think there was this sort of thought amongst the fans and a hope amongst the players and the coaches that the strong finish to last season would carry over. Well, it didn't. And now they lose a game against the Rangers, who they usually match up well with, it, especially in Pittsburgh at home, and then on the road to Detroit, on the road in Toronto, on the road in Montreal, 3 places they do not play well in. Then they come back home for a couple games, and they're going out to Western Canada. I mean, if they don't fix this quickly, this could be a 2-7, 1-6-2 type start that I fear would bury them before the season even began.
Yeah. I mean, if you have good goaltending, you can paper over a lot of the issues on a hockey team. And Tristan Jarry has had some really good seasons in the National Hockey League, but the last 2 years really haven't gone his way. And it's sort of coincided with the Penguins' decline overall. And then last night he starts with allowing 2 goals on 3 shots. How much of a concern is the goaltending situation, and how much of a spotlight is on Tristan Jarry to help this team and to turn things around personally?
Well, there's a huge spotlight on him, no question. I mean, he signed a 5-year contract extension a year ago to be the franchise goalie, and he didn't finish last season as the starter. Mm-hmm. I don't put last night all on Jarry. The first goal, Chris Letang just didn't do anything with a guy in front of him who was allowed to cleanly deflect the puck past Jarry. I mean, second goal wasn't great. I actually thought Jarry was their best player the final two periods. This is not a good defensive hockey team. This is a hockey team that I think on the back end specifically has one player that is an above average defender at this point in his career. That's Marcus Pettersson. And he's the guy that isn't signed. Ryan Graves has been a albatross on this team since signing that contract. I don't know that Jack St. Ivany, well, a nice prospect is a, you know, I think he's probably more of a 7 in this league at this point. You know, and Carlson and Letang, you know, they can generate a lot of chances, but you know, and then when you look at the Penguins defensively, you know, from forwards, I just think their bottom six is wholly inadequate in terms of effective hockey. I was going through their lineup last night. So I guess this is answering your question, but isn't. I was going through their lineup last night, and I counted like 5 guys that at this point in their careers are fringe NHLers in terms of veterans, a couple of other guys that are way overpriced for what they actually give the Penguins, and some young players that probably aren't ready to play, which then leaves you with like the big four and Brian Rust when he's healthy. It's just not a good situation in Pittsburgh right now, and I don't know that any goaltending is going to change that.
You look at at last night, obviously it's a tough start for the Penguins, but you look at the other end of the ice, that's a really good hockey team. Like you watch the Rangers just as much as you watch the Penguins last night. Like, is there a weakness on that team? I know the division as a whole might not be the greatest one in hockey, but I think it might make it a little bit more difficult to evaluate the Penguins in one game because they went up against a team that might end up making a really deep run towards a Stanley Cup this year.
Yeah, that's true, but you shouldn't lose your home opener 6-0.
Sure.
You just shouldn't. Yeah. I mean, not when you have Sidney Crosby and Evgeny Malkin and Chris Letang and Eric Carlson. You just shouldn't lose that game 6-0. I mean, I've had people tell me, well, what's the difference if they lose 3-2 or 6-0? Well, 6-0 gets your boot off the ice. And 3-2 is like a loss you might be able to build on. Now you have to go into Detroit and probably, you know, you can't just come away with a good performance and a close loss because then you're down 4 points before, you know, the season's 4 full days old.
Yeah.
The Rangers are a really good hockey team. You know, how do I evaluate the Rangers? I think it's very simple. I don't know if they're better than the New Jersey Devils in a 7-game series. You know, the Rangers do a lot of things really well. But there's a reason they haven't got to the Stanley Cup final with this group. And until they do, I think the questions about whether they can do enough 5-on-5. Look, they are excellent on the power play. They are excellent on the penalty kill. But you got to be able to be a 5-on-5 team to win a Stanley Cup. I firmly believe that. I've covered 3 teams that have won one. So I still question whether the Rangers are built for a 7-game series against an opponent that can be 5-on-5 and that can skate with them. But there's not a lot of teams in the division that can do that. New Jersey is one. I would say Rangers – Devils are much watched television this year, but I would say to Penguin fans, when you see them play the Rangers or the Devils, that might be a game to skip.
we're chatting with Rob Rossi of The Athletic. Jesse wanted to talk about the good there. I want to go back to the bad. You know, there's a lot of Dubas apologists in this market, of course, because a lot of people in this market believed he was the person who was going to lead the Toronto Maple Leafs to a Stanley Cup, or at least back to some sort of respectability in the playoffs. But as you went through that roster, there was the 4 veterans, the 4 we all know, and guys who shouldn't be in the league because they're fringe or they're not ready or they're just non-viable options at this point. Like, how should someone who understands the back class of Dubas look at that? Did he enter a situation that was a no-win, or has he kind of thrown this away, or at least thrown the opportunity away by putting together a team with a bunch of players that don't fit what should be, you know, is unbecoming, frankly, of a Sidney Crosby-led team.
I think Kyle had the best of intentions in terms of Crosby, Malkin, and Letang, and Mike Sullivan when he took the job. I think that's why he made the moves he made last year. Especially the big swing for Carlson. I think he really felt like, I'm going to give this group a chance, you know? I think he felt like he owed it to them. I think the moves this summer speak more to the job and the reason Kyle took the job, which is he viewed this as a long-term thing. I think it would be disingenuous for anybody to look at this roster as it's comprised and say, at best, it's anything more than an eighth seed. You know, it just isn't. The players they brought in, you know, Bevilier, Hayes, the players they kept, Lars Eller, Ryan Graves, these are not players other teams wanted. The Penguins are hoping that motivated players like that, not in the case of Graves, but other players like that are, you know, Cody Glass, are going to be on short-term deals, guys that have something to prove and they get the best out of them. But I think Kyle is looking at this from a long-term view. From this summer, he didn't want to put on any more big contracts. And he's looking at this as like, I don't want to say after this season is a get out of jail free card, but I think it is this next summer will be the one where he hits the big reset. Because then you'll be down to the final year of Malkin, Letang's contract becomes more movable. You know what you're paying Sidney Crosby to actual money versus cap hit, all those things. And I think if you look at some of the prospects in this organization, I think if they're not up in Pittsburgh getting a look by February, it's either because the Penguins have overachieved with this group or because Kyle's basically said, look, I'm going to dump some of these veterans ahead of the deadline and, bring up the kids and get them some experience. I expect it to be the latter. If I'm wrong, I'll say it, be good for my business if they prove me wrong. But I think it's tough to judge Kyle from that respect, because I do think the first year was let's try to take a home run swing. And I think since then it's been like, okay, let's go to we won't call it a rebuild, but that's kind of what it's going to be.
Okay. So, fans of hockey in Canada, obviously want to see Sidney Crosby have a chance. It sounds like he may not have a chance over the next couple of years as they enter a rebuild, but he will have a chance to wear the Canadian sweater. Do you think that is enough to scratch the competitive itch that we know number 87 has?
Yeah. I mean, look, I wrote about how the contract is structured, and it certainly leaves the possibility open that I guess if things went completely off the rails the next 2 years but I just don't see it. He's a creature of habit. He loves the organization. He's going to want to roll with the organization after. He's won the cup 3 times. I hate to break Canadian hockey fans' hearts. The only time you're going to see him wearing the jersey of a team that has anything to do with Canada is an international play. He's never playing up there. I don't think he's playing anywhere but Pittsburgh in the NHL. I would probably bet my home on that. But in terms of the international, yeah, I think that's a big thing for him. I mean, there's not much left he has to do. I mean, he's probably going to pass Mario Lemieux on the all-time Penguin records here in the next couple of years. He's going to have a chance to cement himself as the bona fide greatest Canadian Olympic hockey, international Olympic, whatever you want to call it, international hockey player of all time, the most accomplished. And that's going to be by captaining Canada to another gold medal. And I think he realizes that even if he's not the best player on that team, there's going to be a big responsibility on him to show all the players on that team who haven't won Olympic gold for Canada how to do it. Mm. I would be shocked if John Cooper doesn't view that Olympic team as Sidney Crosby's team, even if he isn't the top line center.
Oh, 100%. 100%. The Penguins can do a lot to change the conversation around them tonight on Sportsnet 360 against the Red Wings. Rob, we appreciate your time and helping us tee that up.
This was very positive. I'm sure all the Penguin fans are very much looking to grab a nice stiff drink after this. So, salute.
There you go. Thanks, Rob. We appreciate it. We appreciate it. Penguins and Red Wings again on 360
tonight.
He got
me with the allergic line.
Yeah, it was pretty
so good.
You can also catch Macklin Celebrini's NHL debut with the Sharks, hosting the Blues tonight at 10:30 p.m. Eastern on Sportsnet 360. You can also stream that on Sportsnet Plus, of course, on Sportsnet Yankees Royals Game 4. Also tonight, the Maple Leafs do battle with Sheldon Keefe.
Yeah.
A big one. The Maple Leafs, not reeling, but obviously don't want to start 0-2 in the space of, 27 hours would not be the greatest start for them. While the Devils could potentially go to 3-0 after sweeping the Sabres in Czechia last weekend. Given the coaching dynamic here, which team do you think this one means more to?
I don't think there's any question it means more to the Devils.
Yeah, okay.
I think you want to make an impression with your new coach. You know how much this likely means to him. There's a chance he probably puts something up on the whiteboard and says, you know, grab a goal and we'll make your life happy, yeah. Something like that. So, yeah, I think the Leafs obviously want to beat him, but I don't think they, like, hate him or despise him or anything like that. Clearly, they want to win the game, mm-hmm. and they want to avoid going 0-2. But I think the Devils are going to be super motivated to get a victory for their new head coach tonight.
Yeah, I think so. I think you're right. I do think, you know, I feel like the Craig Berube era, and again, we're kind of just putting our own opinions on Berube to start. Yeah. Like, we don't actually know
anything.
The extent of how this thing, yeah. how he ticks, how they're going to tick. Like, we're kind of just putting our own opinion on it. But it's hard to believe that the Devils wouldn't be hyper aware of this,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
He was the guy that got fired. He was the guy that has the chip on his shoulder because he was pushed out the door and they embraced him. Whereas with the Maple Leafs, yeah, Sheldon Keefe over there, but the relationship was always fine, we suppose. Maybe too good
yeah.
between Keefe and the superstars, and that's why there needed to be a change. But I think if it's grading one side, it's the Devils. And I do think you're right. If there's more money on, if there's like, which side has more money on the board? I think probably the Devils, because yeah. Sheldon Keefe, it would mean more to him, I suppose, because Berube doesn't have to worry.
Yeah, exactly.
About his last.
Exactly. Like, as much as Sheldon Keefe is downplaying the game tonight, you know that it means something to him and you know that the Devils are aware of it. But if you're the Leafs, you're not like in the room being like, yeah, let's beat our former coach. Like, Craig Berube doesn't care about that at all. Mm. He wants to win the game because he wants to get his first win as a head coach. I think that's enough of an inspiration for the Maple Leafs to try and get a W for their new head coach, which is what you would have expected last night in the game. It didn't end up working out for them. So, yeah, I think it's definitely the Devils. But I can't wait for this game because I think it'll be a true test to see if the Leafs resort back to that high-flying style that we became accustomed to over the years with them. Because that's the way the Devils play. And that's the way they want to get into the game with you. They want to go end-to-end constantly with you. Can the Leafs style it back? I think we can all assume that Craig Berube wants them to be a little bit more defensive. So mm-hmm. for me, just from a tactical perspective, I think it's going to be a very interesting game to watch tonight.
It will be the Hilde Beast. Dennis Hilde yes. will get his first career start. He hung around the Maple Leafs a lot last year but did not actually get in. So he'll make his NHL debut with Anthony Stolarz.
If he was 6 feet, would he be the Hildebeest, or is it just because he's 6'7"?
Would he be the Hildebeest?
Like,
if
the
Hildebeest
like implies that he's like
6'7" is beastly.
That is beastly. That's what I'm saying. If he's like 5'11", 6 feet, he's probably not the Hildebeest anymore.
Although it does roll off the tongue.
It's a good nickname.
It's pretty easy. It's a layup in our business at the very least. Okay, the NHL is back. You can catch all the action all season long on Sportsnet, Sportsnet Plus, and the Sportsnet Radio Network. To celebrate the start of a new season, Rogers is giving away hundreds of prizes through a national Rogers Beyond the Seat contest, including the grand prize of a chance to win a trip to any NHL game this season. To enter for your chance to win, head to rogers.com/NHL. Contest closes on October 25th. If you could go to any NHL game this year, got something in mind? Leafs in Vegas?
Probably. Honestly, that's the one I haven't seen a game in Vegas yet.
Mm.
And whoever goes just comes back and talks about how incredible it was. And obviously the amazing things that you can do while you're there outside of the hockey game, the entertainment is just phenomenal. Honestly, if there was a number two, it would be to go watch the Leafs and Habs in Montreal.
Yeah. That actually might be my number
one. Yeah.
Because I have seen a game in Vegas.
I don't think I've ever seen it in Montreal. I've been to a Habs game, but it wasn't the Leafs. And that just, there's something special about it, despite the pregame ceremony taking like an hour and a half.
Yesterday. A long pregame show yesterday. Yeah. But that's okay. The Habs can celebrate themselves once a year.
Yeah.
At the very least. Okay, let's do some best bets. Another big game tonight. Thursday nighter, the 49ers 3.5-point favorites over the Seahawks. Which side are you leaning there?
Isn't it amazing that you don't even think about football because there's so much other incredible stuff going on? The fact that the 49ers and Seahawks are locked in an incredible divisional game.
You could decide who goes to the Super Bowl.
Totally. And obviously the 49ers are reeling a little bit. I don't think they necessarily look bad. Defense hasn't been what we've become accustomed to, but their offense has still really been cooking. And even without Christian McCaffrey, I think they're incredibly dynamic. The Seahawks defense over the last couple of weeks has been seriously exposed. And I think it's a really difficult matchup going up against Brock Purdy and the San Francisco 49ers. Saw the reemergence of Brandon Ayuk last week. I just think there's too many weapons in San Francisco. And as dynamic as the Seahawks offense can also be, I think it's going to be tough sledding for the defense. So give me the 49ers minus 3.5 on the road. I also think the desperation level for them, they certainly don't want to lose another game because they're not where they expected to be at this point of the season.
I think this is a really good buy low spot on the 49ers.
Yeah.
I agree with you. I think if I had to play a side, it would be the 3.5. I also think maybe looking at Brock Purdy MVP at a really long price right now
is
a decent look because he just had a brutal game. And they have a stretch here where, if they win this game, primetime, everyone's going to see it. He'll get right back into, I guess, the conversation or the periphery of the conversation. But he's in as good of a position as any NFC quarterback, I'll put it, maybe quarterback league-wide to put up numbers in the end. Like, this is a really high-powered offense. The defense has maybe taken a step back. They deal with injuries, it seems, all the time.
So you'll need the offense.
You'll need the offense. He's a guy that's been ultra-efficient before. If he gets to, like, a late-season big spot game like he did last year where he laid an egg versus the Ravens, he would have won the MVP if he didn't lay that egg.
Yeah.
I think it's more palatable now to consider him in that ilk because he was there last year. And he could put up the numbers this year. So I think Brock Purdy MVP is a decent look at current moment. I like the Devils tonight, minus 135. It's a tough spot for the Maple Leafs.
Yeah.
Might be some jet lag here for the Devils, but they've been waiting around
for a while.
And they've already got a couple reps under their belt. I think it's a nice spot for the Devils. And of course, the money on the board. I think Sheldon Keefe will have that group fired up. I like the Yankees behind Garrett Cole tonight, minus 140. Mm. And another one I was looking at here because I'm Mr. Padre. And I'm a little less confident after last night, scrambling today, trying to find different ways to cover my butt a little bit. NL West team to win the World Series is plus 160. I found that. So it's still like, hey, I'm holding on to the Padres. But if, in fact, the Dodgers just break my heart, like I do think they're going to win the World Series if they get there.
Yeah.
So plus 160, knowing that I have some Padre backing just to get through the Mets, I think that's a decent look. Like I do think the Shohei thing is going to take over at some point. I think his star will shine brighter than Lindor's in an NLCS. And again, I think the Dodgers will have their way with anyone in the World
Series. Yeah, the Mets magic is concerning, but I do think both the Dodgers and Padres are probably better teams on the whole than the New York Mets are. I think you're right about Ohtani, too. I think once they get through, it's just going to be the Shohei Ohtani show. And there's a little bit of magic there with the Padres as well. So, I mean, plus money for that, only got to win whoever wins that game. You only got to win two more series. So,
but then again, I mean, it could just be the New York Mets ripping my heart out with that as well. So maybe I'm just prolonging the hurt being Mr. Padre. Okay, so we have an extra block on the other side. We're going to talk about the Maple Leafs a little bit. The decision to start Hildebeest. Bobby McMahon is getting in for the Maple Leafs. So we'll go over last night, look ahead despite the game starting momentarily. Also talk about the other things that happened in Canadian markets. Last night, the Oilers getting just walloped again.
There's an elephant in the room.
What's the elephant?
My superstar parlay from last night.
Superstar parlay.
McDavid,
we can review the superstar parlay.
The only guy to get a point. The only team not to get shut out was the Avalanche.
Canucks also coughed one up to the Flames. Rafael Nadal retired. So we'll get into all of those. But another reminder, Yankees and Royals game 4, 8 p.m. Sportsnet 590 The Fan, Sportsnet and Sportsnet Plus. The pregame on all platforms begins at 7:30. We will get you up until that point, and also Sidney Crosby and the Pittsburgh Penguins and the Detroit Red Wings tonight on Sportsnet 360. The busy times continue. We will be back on the other side to talk a little Leafs. Go around the horn a little bit. It's a fan pregame.